Where and when were you born, Mr. Pendleton?
I was born in Superior, West Virginia, September 30, 1919.
And so how long have you lived in Gainesboro?
We moved to Roanoke in 1923. And I lived here most all my life until I got married and bought a home up northwest.
And so where were you, where did you live when you moved here in the early days?
Right down here at the Civic Center. Our property was right there on the corner, was up on the hill from the Civic Center. They were called Diamond Hill. In fact, it was a nickname Diamond Hill, but it was really named Clayton Avenue. And we could sit up on the hill and look right down on, because the highway wasn't through there then. It was Hart Avenue. Wasn't even a dirt road up by there. Hmm. And we sit up on the hill and look down into the graveyard. You know where the graveyard is right down here. We live right on that corner.
Well, where did Diamond Hill, where did the nickname come from?
Diamond Hill came from at night. You could stand and look up on the hill and see rocks glittering, look like diamonds. So they started calling it Diamond Hill.
Tell me about your parents and your brothers and sisters.
Well, my mother was born in Superior, not in Superior, she was born in Providence, Rhode Island. And her mother died at childbirth, and one of her mother's sisters got her. In fact, they stole her and moved to Bedford and raised her up until she got 16 years old. And she ran off and got married in West Virginia. So that's why she was 16. And so that's how we began.
Do you know what year that was? When she was 16?
It was way back. We pulled my time. You know? I really don't remember when she was born. I mean, I got it in history at home or something like that, you know, but wouldn't right offhand.
So tell me about your brothers and sisters.
Now, my oldest son is named Freeland Jr. He was in banking here in Roanoke for 20 years.
Well, let me interrupt you.
Yeah.
Tell me one thing. We forgot to talk about your dad, and I want to know about your brothers and sisters, not your children.
Oh, my brother.
Tell us about your father.
Now, my father was named Henry Pendleton. He was from Lynchburg. And he went to West Virginia and worked in the mines. So he got killed in the mines in 1923. And my mother, it was five of us kids. And after he got killed, we moved to Bedford for about 6 months. And then we came to Roanoke. And my mother bought a house here in Roanoke. And my brother, I may have seen him in the paper. His name is Bernard Pendleton. He was chief of staff at the Veterans Administration in Bedford, Massachusetts, 33 years. And after he retired, he went to, he finished Hampton, and then he got his doctorate at Boston University. And when he retired, he came back to Virginia Beach and was assistant dean at Norfolk State College. So he died some years ago. And I had a sister that lived in Philadelphia. She died. It was a twin, Morris. I had a twin, my sister and brother under me was twins. So after they died, and I think that was about it for my family. In fact, I'm the only one living in my immediate family. Mm-hmm. And after my mother was stolen from Providence, her daddy worked for Standard Oil Company in Orange, New Jersey. And he didn't know where she was. And she said after we were born, we were living right down here on Clayton Avenue, right up where the Civic Center is now. She said, I'm gonna find my father. So she got somebody to look after us. We was, you know, teenage and small. When she was 36 years old. She got in touch with some of the people in Rhode Island And they said that her father was living somewhere in New Jersey, Orange, New Jersey. So she went to New York and visited one of my cousins. She said, yeah, I know where he is. So she called him, told him to come over, had a surprise for him. So he came over, and my cousin introduced my mother to her father, but didn't tell her who he was. And he said, where is my surprise? So he said, you see your daughter, that's your daughter sitting beside of you. And he was so enthused, though, he couldn't speak for 15 minutes. Because he had never seen her. She was 6 weeks old when she left. I mean, when they stole her and took her to the bed. And he never knew where she was up until she was 36 years old. Then that was my grandfather. He'd come to Roanoke and visiting us. We lived up on Diamond Hill Inn, right up at the Civic Center there. And I guess we went on from there after my kids was born. In fact, I was married once before. I was married to a girl named Louise Brown. We only was married. We were youngster. We only was married 9 months. And, and after we separated, and I went in service. After that, I volunteered for the Navy. So I went in service during the war. And after I went in service, she wanted to get a divorce. My first wife wanted to get a divorce, so they told her she didn't have no ground to get divorced on. So your husband can get a divorce. So the lawyer told me, said this, that she run it in the paper for 2 weeks. If I didn't correspond to it, I was in service then, that she would, they would automatically give a divorce. So she did. She did that, and I didn't correspond, a check on it. So the captain came in and called me in. And the thing tickled me, said, reason I called you in, so I got these divorce papers here. Said, in eyes of the law, you're a free man. But in eyes of God, you're still married. That's what the chaplain told me. And so afterwards, after I got out of service and I came back and I met my second wife. So we've been married 46 years.
Oh.
And she died in 93 with cancer. She was a nurse at the Borough Hospital and community. And that was all of my family. After my family passed away, then my family came along. My son, oldest son, my second son, and my oldest son, Freeland Jr., run the Cobes. And
can we backtrack a little bit and tell me, what do you remember about your house, the one on
Diamond Hill?
Yeah, Diamond Hill.
Well, it was a 9-room home. I think when she bought it, Clayton Lemons built those homes up there on the hill. Clayton Lemons, I don't know if y'all knew who he was, but he was, he was an aviator. Clayton Lemons, because he had airplanes and things. He had trained people out at the Woodrum Airport, Wooden Field. And so she bought the house down there. I don't think she, during that time, the house was about, I think this house was selling for around $3,000. That was a whole lot of money during that time. And so we lived there until I got married.
What did your mother do? What was her work?
Oh, she was a homemaker, and she worked in service. She worked for, worked for Miss Jesse. Remember Lawyer Jesse? Was a lawyer here in Roanoke? Mm-hmm. Worked with his mother. She was a paymaster for the N&W. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was a paymaster for N&W. And she worked with Miss Jesse. And she took in washing, ironing, and stuff like that, Wow. Yeah. She took in washing and ironing. And I used to deliver the clothes back to them and all. After that, we joined, when I was 12 years old, we joined the Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. So I'm an elder up at the Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. And I worked for the doctors, I worked at the silk mill for 20 years, and it closed. And the doctors, 21 doctors, had asked me about, they were building a building out on McClellan, the professional building. They asked me would I run it for them. I told them if the price was right, I would. I told them if the price was right, I would run it. And when they announced the closing of the silk mill, I had been there 20 years. I went and told them the price was right. I don't care what it was. It was right. So I worked with them for 14 years taking care of the professional building with 21 doctors. And then they came to get position came over in the school for a foreman. They had foremen there, but they never had, in the history of Roanoke, never had no black foreman for all the public schools in Roanoke. 36 public schools during that time, but they don't have many now. And they asked me, would I take that job? In fact, Sonny Thomas, I don't know who you remember. Remember Sonny Thomas? Sonny Thomas and Chauncey Logan. They come to me and asked me, said, Pendleton, say, how about taking that job? I said, I got a good job. I was at the professional building. I said, I got it. He said, well, we want to put somebody in that position. The government said we can't put a white person in that job. Said they got to have a Negro in the job. So I told him, no, I didn't think I wanted it. I had a good job and I was satisfied. And they held the job open for 3 months. And Sonny Thomas, he belonged up at my church, you know. And so he come and said, Pendleton, said, why don't you take that job? Said, we're trying to get somebody to put in that job that's going to know what they're doing. Said, we don't put somebody in there that don't know what they're doing. So I said, well, I'll tell you, I'll put in my resume. So I got Mr. Phillips, remember Principal Addison, Mr. Phillips and Ms. Phillips. Yeah, they helped me write my resume, and I carried it over and gave it to Dr. Paxton. Paxton, he was the superintendent of the school during that time. And he told him, he said, well, if y'all don't hire him, say, I'm going to quit myself. Because he knew I had handled men before cause in the service. I took 250 sailors to Orange, New Jersey, and I was a first-class petty officer. And I told me I could pick my own petty officer to go help me. They had 200 LSTs tied up in dock in the Earl, New Jersey, and the stevedores had struck during the war. They had struck, and so they couldn't let civilians go across the picket line, but Navy personnel could. So I carried from down Yorktown 250 sailors up there, and we got those ships out of dock.
Tell me about, back to the position with the schools. What were your responsibilities?
My
what
responsibility
did you do?
Was I inspected the school, all schools, once a month. I had to go through them and inspect them. And in fact, I was head of the, operational. And our office was down there on 6th Street, right across from the fire station during that time. And I was pretty satisfied. I enjoyed it. I'd come in and go in the office in the morning, get everybody on the job. After get them on the job, then I started going around to visit the school, see what they needed or see what was going on. And my supervisor was from Pennsylvania. He was a real nice guy. He was from Pennsylvania. And so I worked there until 13 years, I believe it was. Hmm.
Tell me about your schooling. Where did you go to school?
I went to Addison. I didn't finish. I went to the 11th grade. But what happened, now I started off, I went to elementary school at Harrison, you know, up at Harrison. That's why I went to elementary school there. And I skipped a grade there. I didn't go to the 8th grade. They moved me from the 7th. They took the 8th grade out, I think it was where it happened. And I went from the 7th to the 9th in Addison. So that made me go up to the 11th. During that time, they didn't go no further than 11th grade then. Yes, he didn't go no further than 11th grade. So in later years, they put the 12th grade back on, see. And so after that, after I came out of school, I told my mother I wanted to go to Washington. And she said, well, what you want to go to Washington for? I said, I want to go up there. In fact, what reason I wanted to go to Washington, I tried to join the Army, and they told me that they wouldn't take any blacks in the Army here in Roanoke. Said the closest place I could go would be Fort Belvoir up near Washington, D.C. And I didn't tell my mother what I was going to do. So she said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you money enough to get there and not enough to get back. So she thought I wanted to go on a vacation or something. So she gave me $10. I never forget it. Enough to catch the Greyhound bus, go to Washington. Got up there. I rented a room on T Street for $250 a week. A room, $250 a week. And I think the bus trip was $2 or $3, something like that, to Washington, one way. And after I got there, you could buy a job. You could buy jobs then. So I went down to the unemployment office and had two jobs that maybe I could have done. But had one job in there for chef cook and one for expert painter, you know, like you paint rooms in this house. So I didn't know much about cooking then. So I said, well, I'll take the painting job. I gave them $1. I paid $1.50 for the job. They gave me the address out near the zoo in Washington. The people lived out there, and their husband worked for the interior, Washington, D.C., for interior at the White House. So she looked at me, the lady looked at me, she said, you're mighty young to be an expert painter. I think I was 14 or 15.
What?
She said, you're mighty young to be an expert painter. I said, I'm an expert painter, though. And she said, where are you from? I said, I'm from Virginia. She said, well, I like Virginia boys. She said, I'm going to give you a chance. She said, well, now, if you mess up my wall, I'm going to have to pay more money. I got in there and painted one of the living room, dining room, hall, everything. I done a beautiful job. And she said, you know, I wouldn't believe that you could do this. So I had it took me a week. My rent was due on this $2.50 room for a week. It was running out. And so she said, I tell you, I got a room down here in the basement you could use, and you could live here until fall of the year if you want to. And it helped me around the house, and I'll see some of my friends get you a job. I said, good, willing, good. So I moved over there, and I used to help her around the house, do things for her. And then up at 16th and Irving, they had this big cafeteria up at the big apartment building. And she got me a job up at bus boy. And I stayed there and worked up to a waiter. You know, he had a lot of fellas from Howard University used to come over and wait table, extra work, you know, and help. So I was the bus boy for some of them for a while, and he would always tip me if I kept the tables clean for him and so on and so, you know. And finally, I worked up to a waiter. And I done that until I came back. I came back to Roanoke in 1938. And they said, what do you come back here for? Ain't no jobs here. So I heard they was hiring over at the silk mill, 1938. And so they asked, I went over there, and the man come out, Mr. Richardson, little short fella. He came out, and way high, he said, I want you, 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 and you. It's like, you know, it was a bunch of guys standing around out there. So they picked me. I was big strapping. I was big then, you know, but I wasn't old. No. So got in there. When he got in to my age, I told him how old I was. They said, I'm sorry. I said, you too young. Says, We can't hire you. So I come on back out, and the next week they were still hiring. I went back over there about 2 weeks later, and they picked me again. And I told them I was 18. And they said, you too young. I don't know why they didn't recognize me. Anyway, what happened? They was getting ready to put the railroads in through there so the engine could bring big boxcars and things in, you know, to the plant down there. So the man I lived next, second door from me when I lived on Diamond Hill, he worked there. And I asked him, I said, how old do you have to be to get a job over there? He said, you got to be 21. So what I did, I went back a week or so later, and they picked me again. And they said, and when I got in there and got into my age, I told them I was 23. I was big enough, but I wasn't old enough. I told them I was 23. So they hired me, and I worked there until 1940, when you had to register for the Army. That's when they caught up with my age. They says, you mean to tell me you've been here this long and you're just not 21 years old? I said, yeah, that's right. I said, I'm 21 and nothing y'all could do now. And so they said, you know, if anything had happened to you, your parents could have sued this company. And I said, well, it did not happen. I'm 21. So.
What kinds of things did you do at this
I ran a forklift, you know, unloading cars and things like that, you know. And I worked on a railroad over there, too. I had to put the tracks in. That was a hard job because I was big enough and all, and I learned how to roll. I don't know where you've seen fellas on the railroad rolling those hammers, spiking down those. I learned how to do all that.
So, and that was something you did in teams, several men.
Oh, at yeah. Time oh, yeah. Had to because it took one section of rail, it would take one, two, three, four, five. It would take eight people to lift one section of rail to set it in.
How did you coordinate everybody's efforts so that you'd work together?
Well, you had one lead man that gave you the go ahead to what to do. It had something like one of them long rails laying out. And I think them things weighed, I don't know how many, a foot, over 200 or 300 pounds a foot, one of them long rails. And they two men up here, two here, two here, and two, and all the way down the line, had something like an ice hook that hooks under that rail, one man on this side and one on that side. The lead man, he would tell you when to get ready to lift. And you would, everybody lift at the same time and move the rails up on the log. Then you had to tamper your logs down, tamper the gravel, gravel under the logs and all that. I had a real, tricky life. And after that, then I started training for prize fighting. I was still working up there though. And I fought at the American Legion. I don't know if y'all remember the American Legion auditorium when it was here. You remember American Legion? And I fought on a call down with Jesse Baker. Remember Jesse Baker? And so I turned out to be a right good prize fighter during that time.
So how old were you then?
Let me see. I had to be 18. I had to be around 18. Because, see, I put my age up when I got the job at the silk mill. And I fought, we used to fight guys out of Richmond and West Virginia, Greensboro. We had this big bout down at the American Legion Auditorium. And my sisters and all my friends were there. I was going to fight this guy out of Richmond that night. So John Archer Brown, I don't know if you remember him or not, he was a trainer. John Archer. He was our trainer. So we got up there, and he's sitting there, Pendleton. I tell you, say, this guy, say, you in the first round, say, we'll check and see if he's a slugger or a boxer. So when I come back to the corner, my trainer say he's a slugger. What a slugger mean? He just come in and wheel in a way, you know. Say, don't you do that. Say, you stay back and box him and try to stay out of his way. I said, okay. I got out there. And I was ducking and dodging. This guy was coming at me with everything he could think of. And I was then going to ride the ropes. You can fall back against the rope and slide down out the way. So I was in a crouch when I went back. My head missed the top rope. I went out through the second rope down on that cement floor. And when I hit the floor, everything went black. Everything went out. And I come to, they had me back up on the ring, on the edge of the ring. And put that smelling sauce. That was worse than the fall. Put that smelling sauce under my nose and I come to. Everything was just quiet when I came through. And the bell rang for the third round. I got back in the ring and I kept shaking my head trying to get my head clear. But I couldn't get my head clear. And my trainer didn't have sense enough to throw the towel and see I was hurt. So I just turned and laid across the ropes and they called a fight. And the end of my fighting career. I wrestled. I did, you know, during that time. And I used to sing in an amateur night at the Strand at the Virginia Theater. You remember that? I'm amateur. And then I sung at banquets at the old Dumas Hotel.
Oh. Did you play an instrument too?
No, I didn't play. I had a fella, James Hendrick. He used to play the guitar for me.
What kinds of songs did you sing?
Well, I used to sing a song called... a lot of Western songs I sung during that time. Old Saddle and Old Corral. And I forget what other song. But anyway, I won the amateur night program up there.
What was the prize?
I think it was $50. $50 prize. And they used to have me every other week at the Strand Theater, right across from High Street Church. Y'all don't remember when High Street Church was up right there where the NNW building is now, I'm saying, right there. Yeah, the theater, big theater was right there.
So were they packed houses? Tell me about audiences.
You packed. Of course, you could get in for 10 cents, you know. Movie wasn't but 10 cents. Hot dog for 5 cents. Soda, 5. If you go out with 50 cents, boy, you could do a whole lot.
Did you see shows at the Dumas and other performers? Tell me.
Yeah, I used to go when Duke Ellington used to come here. And Lyle Hampton, all those, and I used to get in free, me and my friend of mine. We used to dress like some of the, back then time, I don't know where you remember, they had these things called zoot suits. I used to put on my zoot suit, had a long chain to come down here. And we'd go ask when the musical guys come up with the band and things, we'd ask someone to help you carry them in. So we would help them carry them in to get in. We got in free. They thought we were with the band. Me and boy called Pi Samuel. We got in free with most all of the activities down at the Civic Center. Well, it was the American Legion that called it during that time. Right across from the old NNW station. That's where it was.
Were the audiences all black, or were there whites in the audience too?
No, white in it was when Cab Calloway and Jimmy Lunsford and all them bands come here. The Negroes was down on the floor, and the white was up in the balcony. They were, they were segregated.
Yeah.
The whites was, they'd come, they would fill the balcony up, just to see the bands and things, see us dance.
I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and see us dance, and it's. When a white band would come, if Negroes want to see it, they could go down and sit in the balcony and watch them, hear the music.
Do you have a favorite that you heard? Or
my favorite was Duke Ellington. That was my favorite. I don't know who you remember, Duke Ellington.
Yeah.
That was my favorite. And Duke Ellington and Lyle Hampton. All those bands. They used to come here all the time.
Mm. So yeah. Where did they stay when they came?
At Dumas.
Oh, at the, okay.
The Dumas Hotel. Yeah, right up there at Dumas. Yes.
Tell me, you said you visited the library when you were a little boy.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I can't
remember. Coming to
Gainesville. Oh, it wasn't like this. I know they didn't remodel it. It wasn't nothing like this. I tell you that now. And Miss Lee was down. She was down here, and her husband was head of the YMCA, Mr. Lee. And that was up on Third Avenue. Then it wasn't over here on Orange Avenue. That was And then later years after. I joined the I don't know where you heard of the Dukes and Earl. I tell you who's got the place now. We sold it to them after some years. We bought the place out in Kingstown, and I tell you who's got it now. They have parties and banquets and different things out there. This guy was a coach at William Byrd. See it advertised every Sunday. Malone's Peak. We used to own that.
Oh.
Yeah, that club, Dukes and Earl. We owned it from 1960 up until we sold it, because I was the president of the club for 5-6 years. Until most of the guys got old.
Yeah. So it was a membership.
Membership.
Club.
Yeah.
Did you have entertainment come, or it was get together?
We would get together, but we would have entertainment, but it would be at the Civic Center, have former dances and things like that. But the place wasn't big enough to do that, but we would have parties and things out there at New Year's and Christmas and different stuff like that. It was a social club. Mm. But we had, in later years, we had moved into the stock. You know, everybody got stock in it. And as the members died out, we had to pay them out of the stock. And usually most time was $4,500. And we couldn't, after members coming and dying out, things got pretty hectic. So I decided we were going to sell it. Some of them didn't. So I got enough guys together and we sold it to Malone. But it's beautiful. You ever see it? It's beautiful.
And where is it then?
Out of Kingstown.
Okay.
Right out from Holiday Inn, Airport Holiday Inn. It's about a block or two blocks from Holiday Inn. Malone's Peak. But it's real. Now you see it on sometime on Sunday. They advertise, you know, show picnics and all that stuff out there. Well, it's real nice.
Tell me about, you said you started to tell me about the military and taking the men up to New Jersey. So
yeah, we went.
So
to,
you joined which branch of the service?
No, I volunteered for the Navy.
Okay.
And see, when I wanted to go to the Army, but they wasn't taking any blacks in the Army here in Roanoke, so I had to go to Fort Belvoir in Washington. So when I got up there, I went over, and they sent me over to a building, and they said, you're not in trouble, are you, by me wanting to volunteer? Mm-hmm. They thought maybe I want to get in the Army and get away from something, you know. And I told them, no, I just wanted to, some of my friends had joined, you know, and I wanted to join.
And about what year was this then, you think?
1936. Mm-hmm. In 1936. And when the war broke out, I said, now they're going to want to draft me to the Army, and I'm not going to the Army. So I volunteered for the Navy. I was working the silk mill. So they told me if I could pass this test. I went down to the post office. We'll send you to the seaman branch. They had opened up a seaman branch for during that time, they didn't have nothing in the Navy but stewards and ship's cook. I said, well, I knew I could do something better than that. So they opened up a seaman branch. Secretary Knox was the Secretary of the Navy during that time. And they opened the seaman branch up, so I passed the test, and they sent me to Richmond. I was sworn in Richmond. I went down on Monday. And Wednesday, I was in Chicago, Great Lakes. Just that quick. And I sent me to Richmond. We got sworn in down there, and we got on the train, a bunch of us, and left and went to Chicago. And I went through boot camp. I think I was about the 12th company during that time. They went through Great Lakes, Illinois up there. And then they had a service school you could go to and strike for your rating at Hampton Institute and different places, you know, or either you could go in the outgoing unit. So I took the outgoing unit. So if you take the outgoing unit, that means you go and work by hand, instead of studying in the school with the products and stuff, with the mine. And so I was on the mine depot down in Yorktown. And a lot of the guys from Chicago, they went into service school down at Hampton. And when they graduated from Hampton through their course, I was a third class petty officer. They said, how did you get up? And half of the guys that went down there, only 25% of the class came out rated, you know, that went into school. But I went and struck for my rating. I went and worked with the actual thing, the mines, the depot, and all that. And I was a third-class petty officer when they came out of school. And I was on the base when, I don't know if you remember, the base blew up. The whole base blew up down there in Yorktown. And what happened? That Tarpex plant, the stuff that they used in torpedoes, that stuff was dangerous. That place blew. In fact, I had been out to the USO. I came in and was in the petty officer quarters. We had different quarters than the rest of them, the officers did. And I was in there and we're getting ready to go to bed. And just as I aimed to get in the bed, a light blaze went straight up. I was looking out the window, looked like about a mile high in the air. And then that whole peninsula shook. So I thought the Japanese had struck. Somebody had sabotaged. and blew up the place down there. And so my mother was in Washington. She was looking for me that weekend. She was scared to death, thought maybe I had got hurt, but only 5 people got killed. They had civilians working at these plants. They sent all of them home that evening for the night shift and told them to come back the next morning. It was a good thing they did. But they knew that somebody had got in there, because somebody had knocked one of the guards, Marines on the gate, had knocked him in the head, and they had got into the place. But they had all these magazines all out. If you go down to Williamsburg and go down through there, you can look over and see these humps in the ground. That's where they kept ammunition. Called it, magazines. That's what they called them. They kept all this ammunition stored in these humps. It's right down there now. On the train, you can see it from when the train go through. And so they wouldn't let no Navy personnel go over at the scene. It was the Marine there was guarding at night. He was about 200 yards from where the explosion was, and he busted both his eardrums and twisted his rifle in his hand like that. And the railroad cars sitting around his building, with the doors closed, the concussion just boosted the side of the cars out like that. It looked like somebody just pushed them out, side. And all the automobiles down there, it just sucked the tops right into the seat. And we were right on the base there at Yorktown. And Norfolk got a worse shock than we did. Because the concussion followed the water towards Norfolk. And they got worse. We were right down where it was, but they got the worst end of it in Norfolk. So they didn't let none of them. We went down. They sent a party out the next day. We went down to see. It looked like all the trees around. It looked like somebody just took something to skin them. And some of them big railroad car wheels was found a half a mile from exposure. And lo and behold, in Treasure Island down in California, the same another plant of that same thing blew up. I'm telling you, it was awful that day. And then there was five guys that got killed. It was one of them from Roanoke, Miss what is her name? She was a teacher at Addison, taught home ec at Addison. Her brother got killed. He lived down in Gloucester Point, but he worked on the base. And 4 other guys. And the only thing they found of them two, they found one head burnt and a hand in a glove. That's all they found.
Let me pull you back to Gainsborough. Yeah. I want to ask you, when you were young, were there any adults or who were important people in your life that?
Well, Mr. Lee was one at the Y.
Did you spend a lot of time at the Y? Is that where your boxing developed?
Developed John Archie. We used to, right, it was where the Cleta home, right here, right across there. Well, it was a big building. The Y was right across from Cleta. Drugstore was right down the corner. And the Y was right there. And we trained upstairs. And Mr. Lee, upstairs, that's where we trained at, upstairs on the last third floor. Mr. Lee, and who else was it? Coach Lawson. It was the coach at Addison during that time back then. And because I played football at Addison. And let me see who else was. Undertaker Clark. I don't know about you. Years ago, was Undertaker. Used to be right over in the corner of 7th Avenue. Undertaker Clark.
How did you know him?
Know who?
Mr. Clark.
Well, back in the day, in fact, everybody knew Clark, because during that time, him and this other Undertaker wasn't but 2 Undertakers, Black Undertakers, he had wrong with Ben. And I'm trying to think who. In fact, he knew everybody, just about, in Roanoke. Yeah, not everybody, but all the blacks. He knew all the blacks in Roanoke. Undertaker Clark. And I'm thinking this other Undertaker, Williams, up on Gilm Avenue. Undertaker Williams. His wife died not too long ago, Miss Williams.
Were there certain things that you and your friends, after school, you'd go off and, was there something you'd do or someplace you'd go or,
well,
or
most
on
of the
weekends? What did you all do as kids?
We didn't go no on weekends, not out of town.
But, I mean, did you, would you go on hikes or did you ever go camping or did you go to the drugstore and...
Well, we used to hang out right here on the corner of the drugstore.
Yeah.
We used to hang out there. And then sometime on Sunday, we used to go to Breakfast Bottom. A place called Breakfast Bottom. It's down below Venton. We used to walk down there, and there's a creek. We used to go swimming. Didn't have no swimming pool. Not then. Later years, they got the swimming pool right up there on right across from the Y. You can see part of it there now. The cement rock. Part of that swimming pool was right there because there was no road going through that end. Nothing but a dirt road going up through there.
How'd you learn to swim?
In a creek.
Oh.
Down at Berkeley Bottom.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I learned how to swim. And because you had to know how to swim in the Navy anyway. You had to pass the test. But when you went there, they tell you, so you jump in here, swim all the way around and back up and get out. Said all those who could swim didn't have to take the test. And we had some that had never been in the water in their life, and they hauled up and jumped off that thing in the water. And the man didn't go get them. he told him, he said, I said the ones that knew how to swim. And they teach you how to jump. You don't dive off of no ship. If a ship gets blowed up, you don't dive off of no ship. You jump feet first. They teach you to jump feet first. So you can dive off and hit your head on some of the debris in the water and mm-hmm. drown. So you jump the feet first. And let me see. And I was 11 years old. That's another thing I did. I catted out at Old Monterey. 11 years old. That's how I got into golf. I used to make two rounds, 36 holes on Sunday. And I get $2.50 for 18 holes.
So that was pretty good money.
Oh, Lord, it was good money for 11-year-old youngster back then. And then the guys would tip you pretty good caddy. They would tip you maybe 50 cents, a quarter. That was good money.
So what did you do with your money?
Well, I tell you, then I had a job down on Salem Avenue with Mr. Fagan. I shined shoes. I used to shine shoes down on Salem Avenue and at his barbershop. I bought my first suit that my mother didn't have to buy for me. And it's Joe Stein's on Jefferson Street, clothing store called Joe Stein. I bought my first suit. I was crazy about that suit. Hung it up down there where I was in the room, and my sister had gotten mad with me or something. Oh, she was up the street playing with the boys and things, you know. She was kind of tomboyish. My mother told me to go up there and get her. I went got me a switch. Went up back to go whip her. Get her a couple of times, run her home. And the next morning I got up, went back to look at my suit hanging up on behind the door, and it was in shreds. My first suit I ever bought in my life. She done took a knife and this cleared it. So I told my mama, said, if you don't kill her, I am.
What happened? Was she punished?
Oh, yeah, she was punished.
How long did it take? How long before you got another suit?
Oh, I don't remember how long it was, but it was my first suit. I'd get $1 or $2, I'd go up and put it on my suit. Layaway, you know, that I got that suit. First suit I ever bought in my life. Yeah, my sister, she messed that suit up right quick. Because she knew I was crazy about that suit.
What other memories can you tell me about?
Let me see.
Young and being at home with your mother, and what kinds of chores did you all do around the house?
I did most of scrubbing and help my mother wash. I did most of everything. My brother didn't. He was always in school. In fact, he was older than I am, because when I got a job at Silk Mill, I helped pay his education in Hampton. Because each one of us kids, when father got killed, we got so much money a month until we reached the age of 18, you know, through the pension. And my mother got a pension as long as she lived, as long as she didn't marry anymore. But now she was married, her pension would stop. So she raised all five of us and never married again. Never married. And he finished school and got his doctorate. And he worked at the VA for a while, and he left here and went to Massachusetts. And after he finished Hampton and got his doctorate and all up in Hampton, I mean up in Boston University. And after he retired, he went down to Norfolk State. They wanted him at Hampton, but he said it was, by being retired, he was too much work at Hampton, he said. But he was the president of the Hampton alumni. He traveled all over the United States, wherever Hampton.
Did your sisters finish their schooling? Or?
No. My sister, youngest sister, she worked for Miss Finneran.
What was your sister's name?
Her name was Bernice. Now, she worked up in Connecticut for one of the richest real estate. In fact, she raised all of their children, my sister did. She went there and got this job. The husband, Mr. Finneran, and Ms. Finneran, both of them was alcoholics. They had five kids, one set of twins, and they were 18 months old. And then the other, Joe, and the other two girls, the five of them kids. And my sister took over there, and when she went to work for the Finnerans, they took them out there on stretcher, both the man and the wife, put them in this, rehab or something, you know. And she stayed there and raised, they were millionaires. She raised them kids until they got grown, my sister did. And then they bought this town in Washington. In fact, they owned about the whole town in, it's a shopping center. What's the name of this shopping center right out of Washington? I see it on TV sometime. Anyway, they build all these shopping centers over there at this place. Miss Finneran and my sister, and when she moved back to Roanoke, Miss Finneran, she came here. They came here to the funeral when she died, and the children and all of them came. And they was about the richest family in the Connecticut, in real estate. And I used to take my kids up there. We used to go on vacation. My niece was living up there. I used to go up there and stay with them and go out on the Cape. And where they was, they had their own private beach and everything. We used to go out there and my kids used to play with their kids and have a good time. Yeah, so.
Tell me more about when you were young. Were holidays important in your household, Christmas and Easter and Thanksgiving? Did you have extended family that came from the Bedford area? Or?
Not really. Most of them, when we moved back to Roanoke, some of them moved here to Roanoke. My cousins and all, they moved from Bedford to Roanoke. And it wasn't too much of my mother. It wasn't too much of us to have a good Christmas. We got a little something, all right, five kids and nobody but the mother to raise, you know. She raised all five of us by herself.
Were there any special, was Christmas meal, was that special Christmas dinner?
Oh, yeah. I still carry on the tradition of Thanksgiving. I always have Thanksgiving dinner for the family. And then my niece, she have Christmas dinner for the family. I was marking down here the other day how many people were, but be about 16.
For Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
So what's on the menu?
And
you cook this?
Oh, yeah. I cook everything. I got turkey, ham, chitlins. That was the meat. And what else? And chicken. and greens, collard greens. String beans. I already got my string beans done and frozen in a box. And potato salad. Or ranch potatoes. You'll be the ranch potato.
Tell me, what are they?
Well, you take red potatoes and cut them in blocks, put them in, and cook them. Then you put a layer of cheese, and a layer of ranch dressing. And then you build it up, and then you run it in the stove. You're talking about something good.
Cheddar cheese? What kind of cheese?
Yeah, sharp cheese.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah, sharp cheese. It's ranch. and corn pudding. Now, I don't make the corn, but my niece makes better corn pudding than I do. I can make it, but my mother taught my niece how to make corn pudding. So I used to buy the, I went out Kroger the day before yesterday. They got this canned corn on sale, 10 for $5. So I got I got that crushed corn and the whole corn. You mix it. But I can make it, but look like me, hers is better than mine. And then I got the pumpkin pie, sweet potato pie, pound cake. I got my pound cakes already ready. And I got my crust in. I always buy my crust, that Pillsbury crust. And I got to get my sweet potato.
And you've been doing that for years.
Oh, I've been doing that ever since my mother passed. And my mother been dead now, I guess, about 15, 16 years. And I've been doing it every Thanksgiving.
So before that, you all went to your mother's then?
Oh, yeah.
See,
my mother lived right across the street. She bought a house right across the street from me. I used to live on Thomas up the street, so I sold that house and built another one right across from my mother. In 65, I built it. 65. And I'm still there now. A guy told me one time, he said, a fella I worked with at Silk Mill, I told him I was getting ready to build a house. He said, well, don't do like I did. He said, now, he built this big house, and he had three kids. He said, less than 15 years, they were in their body cell, him and his wife. He said, don't build no big house. I said, well, I got three kids. And he said, well, this build big enough to get by. He said, less than 15 years, you're going to be there by yourself. So, and he was true to that. And I built a five-room brick. I think I got two bedroom, living room, den, and kitchen, and a bathroom was there. And the basement is finished, all basement. One side, I got a couple of refrigerator and freezer, wash and dry and all that. And then on this side, I got a wreck bookcase, and television, and a bar. Guy took the brick left from the house where I built the house and built me a bar. Oh, you remember James Richardson? Worked with Red Charleston? Yeah, good bricklayer. They built a Lawson building. Yeah, they laid the brick for the Lawson building. And made me a bar, nice long bar. Six people at the bar. Yeah, so now I was by myself after my wife died, but all the kids are gone. And my youngest son, he was living up on Staunton, I believe it was. And so after him and his wife separated, my daughter and my oldest son said, why don't you let Buster come back home with you and be there? You ain't got no business being in that house by yourself. So I thought about that thing. And I told him, I said, you can come back. I said, up to him if you want to come back. And he'll come back if you want to. And people asked me, said, Mr. Pendleton, when you going to get married? I said, get married? Well, I said, I ain't marrying nobody else. I said, what I got here going to my kids. I said, whatever I got here going to my kids. I said, ain't nobody come here and take that away from them. So he moved back, and he's a big help. He cuts grass and one thing, and wash dishes. His dad don't mind. I clean up the dishes. He will. And when I have this big party, after I done finished cooking, I go sit down. They do all that. My daughter and all of them and my granddaughter, they come in and wash up all the dishes and clean up everything. I don't do nothing after that. I just sit back.
You said when you were 11 years old, you were a golf caddy. So
yeah, I caddied.
And did you learn to play then, and you still play?
Yeah, well, up on Diamond Hill, there's a man named worked at NNW, had a little three or four hole golf putting green up there in his yard.
Do you remember his name?
Yeah, Lawson. His name is Lawson, Mr. Lawson. And never forget him. He worked at NNW, and he drove a Chrysler 77. Thing made like a box. Back then, I don't know what model it was, but way back, I was a youngster doing that time. And he had this beautiful, I thought it was the prettiest car I ever seen. It's built just like the Hummer. You know how the Hummer in the block? Well, that's the way it looked. Chrysler 77, they don't make them no more. I don't know when they stopped making them anyway. And it was Battleship Gray. I never And he had a little go up anyway. He used to go in and put around up there until after. And then when I got into golf, Dr. Clayton out at Kingstown, he had this farm out there. He had a 9-hole sand green golf course. Every Sunday after church, we used to take it out. All of us golfers used to take out families, my kids and all, and have a picnic, take out a dinner out there and play golf and eat. And Miss Carter, you remember Miss Carter used to run the nursing home? She would come out and cook every Sunday.
So how many people came?
Oh, it was a good 20 or 30 people. She would fry chicken and all that out there at Clayton's farm, called the Clayton's farm. You know, Dr. Clayton, man, used to, you know, his sons and all. And all of them played golf, you know. So we'd go there every Sunday. We'd take out a Sunday dinner out there and we'd play golf and it's swimming pool and everything out there. It was real nice.
Well, we're about to wrap it up. Is there any last thing you want to tell me that I didn't ask about? Or
Let me see. I don't remember. Oh, you know about that, though, about out to the graveyard. We used to play in the, down in the bottom part of First Baptist Church graveyard. That belonged to First Baptist Church. I guess y'all knew that. And the city part was up a little further where they made it come off the interstate right there at Orange Avenue, cut up through there. That was the city's graveyard. They claimed when they cut up through there, they found bones and bodies. They just put it in a box. And I don't know where they carried it. Buried it somewhere else. But First Baptist graveyard is still there.
And so as boys, you said, used to go down there and play?
We used to play right in there, flat part, you know, in the graveyard. We used to play down there till 10, 11 o'clock at night. And my brother, he'll never forget, he tried to scare us. He got a white sheep, went around and come up behind one of the tombstones with his white sheep on. We weren't scared. We got some rocks and started rocking him. He was hollering, "Hey, this is me." Yeah, you're going to scare us, you know. Got this sheet and come down through that wall. We were throwing rocks at
him. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, and right yes, then, sir. I don't know who y'all knew. That was where the motel, right across, right there. That was the dump. That was the dump. And they dumped, you know, trash and everything there. And then they covered it over with dirt after the years. And then they put the pizza, they built a Pizza Hut. Another trucking company was there. And Ms. Old Lady Jabbo, she owned it. She owned that place, all that thing up there. She offered it to me, that whole square in there where they got this hotel and a motel and all, for $1,000. And I said, I had the money to buy it. My mama said, "Miss Jabbo said she'll sell you that for $1,000. I said, "I don't want that old dump." Well, they had to uncover it over, you know. I said, "I'm going to buy me another automobile."
So well, what did you buy?
I bought another automobile. And so, in later years, that property was worth a whole lot of money. I let it get away from me. So, it got away, and I said, "It showed the go. You really ought to look at things, you know." And all along Hart Avenue there, them was houses. All the houses, they were selling the lots for $75. Mm-hmm. I could have bought them. I had making money of silking me up, but no, I had to have another automobile.
Thank you so much for.
And also, I was the first Negro that owned a Cadillac in Roanoke.
What year was that? Do you remember?
I bought the first one is in 47. They wouldn't even sell a Negro a new Cadillac here in Roanoke. Harry Franklin run a pool room in Henry Street. He went to Norfolk and bought his. Miss Gill, that stone house up there, she bought one. She went to Bluefield. J.B. Clayton bought one. He went to Bluefield and bought his. So the boy that worked there, I knew the boy that worked at Kelly. He said, "Pendleton, they got a demonstrator out here. And it's in good shape." Quite natural. That's the one they carry around and show people, you know. He said, "You can buy it. They'll sell you that." So I went there and bought that. But and then later years, what happened, the guy from Martinsville took over, they took the franchise away from the guy at the Cadillac place. And the guy from Martinsville took it over. And he said, I don't care what color it was, I sell him a Cadillac, said it to him.
He was a businessman.
He was a businessman.
Thank you so much for talking to us this morning. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. I got another meeting to go to.
Oh, all right. I need to get a picture.